Hello, and welcome to the ParaAqua podcast, the science podcast that shines a light on the newest and most interesting research being conducted in the fields of aquatic and marine ecology. My name is Joe Money, I'm a PhD student and the host of this podcast. Today I'm joined by Jonas Malk, a PhD student at the Leibniz Institute of Freshwater Ecology and Inland Fisheries in Berlin, and we'll be discussing his research into the selective feeding behaviour of the invasive quagga mussel in freshwater ecosystems, and the ways in which these mussels in general are impacted by climate change. Jonas, how are you doing?
Thanks for asking. I'm quite fine, actually. I'm about to try to finish my PhD soon, so the stress is building a bit up, but I would say I'm still a bit in the fun zone of work.
In the fun zone, that's an interesting way of describing it, but nice. I'm in a similar space myself, actually, with regards to PhD, and I hope yours is going nice and smoothly.
Yeah.
Nice. So Jonas, can you give us a quick summary of your background, education, and research history?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in a small town called Villingen in the Black Forest in the very south of Germany, close to Switzerland and France. And after working as a postman for a year and traveling a bit, I decided to move to Berlin and study environmental science and technology at the Technical University, which is something like environmental engineering, you could name it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun and brought me to doing a PhD over like from environmental engineering to go to biology or freshwater ecology to the IGB. So moving a bit from sewage water to freshwater, to drinking water, to freshwater, and now to my PhD topic, which is like a bit of an unusual way of going, probably for my way of studies.
Nice. And IGB is the institute where we actually met, wasn't it? Then that's the initialism for the Leibniz Institute that in Berlin.
Yeah.
Some good memories back in back on the shores of the Mugel Sea, back in Berlin.
Oh yeah, that's a lovely place.
Yeah, it is very nice. Lovely. So I'm guessing that most of our audience might not know much about mussels and perhaps associate them with the coast and maybe even seafood dishes more than anything else. So could you tell us a little bit about mussels and the role they play in freshwater ecosystems?
Yeah, mussels are sitting at the sediment of the lakes, and what they do all day is sit there and filter large amounts of water for food, for survival for them. They mostly feed on planktonic algae like cyanobacteria or green algae. So everything what you see in the water that gives like a bit of a greenish or brownish color to the water. And afterwards, they digest it and excrete nutrients for other organisms to live there. And in summer times, when the mussels are ready to reproduce, the males kind of release sperm into the water and the females try to catch what they can. And they try to siphon the sperms and then fertilize the eggs within the mussels and then hatch like so-called veliges into the water that then can thrive, move for a little bit with the water, lie somewhere on the sediments, and then reproduce there in high numbers.
Nice.
So if the mussels are close to each other, they have a high chance of the sperm and the females to match, and then they can grow and from season to season grow in bigger numbers.
Nice. When I think of mussels, I always think of sort of the intertidal zone in the on the coast, but they're also quite common in freshwater ecosystems, right?
Yeah, for sure. They act a bit different in freshwater ecosystems because you know them from the tidal systems, and there they dig down into the sediment. And in freshwater ecosystems, you can find them in rivers and also in lakes, and they basically mostly sit on the sediment.
Mm.
And there, when they filter the water also for lakes, they can sometimes provide cleaner water for the lakes, produce nutrients, and also an environment for other species to live on them or close to them on the lake sediments. And also like from freshwaters, you sometimes see them that they can also act like an important an important source of food for people living on the lake shores. We often sometimes see people coming to Lake Müggelsee and then with a little net and then collecting mussels for them for to make a soup or other stuff.
Nice.
So it can also be like of a cultural importance to some people.
That's very cool. Nice. Now, your study species is the quagga mussel. Am I right? What made this species a good choice for your research? And could you tell us a little bit about its recent emergence as an invasive species around the world?
Invasive in general means that it's non-native, so it comes from somewhere else, and that it also has like a negative impact on the ecosystem. So that's an important point here to make, that we have quagga and zebra mussels, which together form the family of the so-called dry sinead mussels. And the quagga mussel is my research object, and they have like one proper trait that is important for them, how they act. So the zebra mussels were coming a lot earlier into many lakes in the Northern Hemisphere because they were transferred earlier, but they can only attach to hard substrates, so like rocks or ships or metals in the water or something. And the quagga mussel came in more recent years. And the quagga mussel has the advantage that it can also go on soft substrate as like sands or everything that's there on the sediment. So when it can come in way higher numbers because it can invade way larger areas. And so it outcompetes the zebra mussel. And that's what we see in a lot of lakes in the last years.
So, yeah,
And
so it has a bit more of a broad niche, I guess, in terms of
yeah, that's the
area
point.
to colonize.
And also, like with when it comes in way higher numbers, it has way severe impacts on the lake ecosystem because from a lot of mussels, you see them that they filter a bit of water. They are a part of the ecosystem and do their surf for it. But the quagga mussels, they come in such large numbers that they filter so much water that they consumes a lot of food that was there already for other zooplankton or fishes or for other organisms. So they really draw the attention of the ecosystem to themselves.
I see. It sounds like they can be quite problematic. Can you give our audience a little bit of a insight into this sort of the scope of this invasive species? Are they spreading around the world? Are they spreading around Europe or Germany or?
They're mostly spreading around the Northern Hemisphere. So you can see them mostly in Europe, North America, where they have large effects on the ecosystems. They more or less change the whole Great Lakes in North America there. And just recently, they were jumping in South Europe over the Alps. So you can find them now in Northern Italy, in Spain, in France. So they are still expanding a bit. And what I can say from our lake is that if you have like a quite a shallow lake, and the mussels are coming in big numbers, the impact of the ecosystem is that Lake Müggelsee, for example, the whole water volume of the lake is exchanged twice per day through the mussels. So every
Wow.
mussel filters like 300 milliliters of water an hour, and that this sums up to like very large numbers of filtered water in the end. So there are like very drastic effects in the end.
Sounds like a really big effect. Is this invasion of ecosystems across the Northern Hemisphere being accelerated by humans, perhaps, or is this a natural spread?
Yeah, no, it's very much accelerated by humans. They act like a vector for the mussels because, like, you can have like birds jumping from one lake to another, like collecting a mussel and bringing it there, which is a very slow process. But humans often take like fishing equipment or like stand-up paddles or even boats from one lake to another to the other one without cleaning them properly, and then transferring mussels from one place to another. And what one aspect that was really like pushing the mussels into places very far away are cargo ships, because cargo ships more or less act like syringes, where they at some place where they are, they take up ballast water for the cargo they release there, and then they pump up water like syringes, then transfer it over like 100,000 of miles probably, or 10,000s, and then discharge the water again, where they eject all the mussels and other environmental DNA into lakes very far away. And this is like probably the most effective vector there is.
I see, yeah, that makes complete sense. I guess they're traveling all around the world on a daily basis. So, as I understand it, quagga mussels are selective feeders. I'm aware of this phrase when used with active feeding animals, for example, pandas selectively feeding on bamboo. I think everyone's aware of that. But how does this work with filter feeding bivalves?
Okay, the panda example is pretty funny, yeah. But I think it works a little bit different with the mussels, because they are not actively like they can't move from one place to another like a panda could. But there are funny videos of the mussels that you can see online, where the mussel is just sitting there and it's surrounded by different kinds of algae. And then it's filtering all the time, and you can see it. And then suddenly, at some point, you really see them ejecting actively some algae. Like it's really like a mechanism that looks a bit like spitting, where they spit out what they don't like. And so it's still unclear what's the exact reasoning behind this. So it's rather like a morphological trait of the algae. So how they look like, how they are shaped, of which like materials they consist, and not like which some algae have like toxicity of the algae, because they feed the same on toxic as non-toxic strains of specific algae. So at some point the mussel just chooses what they don't like, spits it out, and this is important for a lake in the end, because the selective feeding mechanism just makes it liking some algae and disliking other algae. So the algae the mussel dislikes, they can have an advantage in the end, because they can thrive in the end, because they do not have competitors anymore, and have all the nutrients for themselves. So this can change the ecosystem of a lake very much.
I've seen a video of this spitting behavior, I guess that you could call it, and it's very remarkable the way that you never really think of a like an oyster or a mussel or any sort of bivalve like this being able to do something that seems so like human when you've got something in your mouth that you don't like. It's quite funny in that way, I guess. So, how are mussels in general responding to the increasing temperatures associated with climate change, and what impact would this have on important freshwater ecosystems?
Yeah, that's more or less what my research in the end is about, where I'm trying to combine the selective feeding behavior, which we talked about, with what happens through global change nowadays, that we have increasing temperatures, and at some point the lakes are getting hot. Like in Lake Müggelsee, we can reach temperatures of 30 degrees during summers, during heat waves, which is like very hot for a lake ecosystem. And the hotter it gets, the more the mussel gets under stress and stops being active. So it just closes its shells and stops filtering. So this is pretty interesting for cyanobacteria in the lakes, which can thrive under hotter temperatures. So on one hand, they can have the advantage of increasing their growth by temperature itself, and then on the other hand, they are affected by colder temperatures from the selective feeding behavior of the mussel, so they can be eaten or not. And on the last day, when it really gets hot, they grow and they are not eaten by the mussel anymore, or not filtered by the mussel more. So this gives them like very much advantages. And those cyanobacteria are the ones that are potentially toxic, where you can sometimes find your home lake or your home waters closed because you can't bath there anymore, because there have been too much of those cyanobacteria. And the mussels in the end can lead to like stronger occurrences of these events in the end.
It seems like a real, almost a triple threat of the sort of the spread of these mussels and the increasing influence they're having. Plus the rising temperatures changing the algal cyanobacteria ratios in lakes, and then also having this selective feeding that's being maximized by the sort of success of the quagga mussels.
Yep.
It's really, I guess you can add all those things together and it's going to have a real bigger impact on lake ecosystems as we know them.
Yeah, because they all interact a bit with each other, and all of them are very, very important freshwater stressors nowadays for themselves already, like invasive species, global change, and harmful algal blooms from cyanobacteria. But pretty much the interesting way about this is how those three topics interact with each other.
And that brings us nicely actually onto our next question, which is how has your PhD project managed to test the effects of both changing planktonic communities and increasing water temperatures due to climate change, and bringing into that the effects of these quagga mussels?
Yeah, my PhD was comprised more or less of three parts in that phase, where I was very lucky to be at an institute where we have a lake that's been intensely monitored for, well, 40 years now, since like the late 70s.
And that's Lake Müggelsee, isn't it? The
That's
one that
Lake
we were mentioned
Müggelsee,
earlier,
where
yeah.
we have like a data set of weekly samplings for all the chemical parameters in the lake, but also like for algae and zooplankton with a microscope. So there's been like a general monitoring of the lake very intensively, which was interesting because we, at the beginning, we missed the invasion of the quagga mussels. They were just at places where they haven't been before. So we could really trace back the invasion from the data on that time point, and then could dig into the data and start like, okay, what has changed after the invasion? So I'm doing like a big data analysis of 10 years pre-invasion and 10 years after invasion, and I was just starting to look like what changed. And then we found those interesting patterns with temperature and cyanobacteria in the end, where we had a good starting point from what happened in the lake. Then we tried to prove what we found with experiments, where I took mussels from the lake, brought them to the lab and tested how they feed on different algae at different temperature ranges, so from 24 to 32 degrees. And there you nicely see that the hotter it gets, the less they filtrate. And on the other hand, that there's a selective feeding behavior where there are some species that they do not like at all and do not filter at all on them. And those two topics we combined a bit, and with some colleagues in the Netherlands from the NIO, the Netherlands Institute of Ecology, they developed an interesting lake model called PC Lake Plus, which is a pretty easy ecosystem model, which we are applying to Lake Müggelsee at the moment, where we try to have like a digital version of Lake Müggelsee, then implementing the mussels into the model structure in the end, and then also try to answer questions that we couldn't answer in an experiment and also couldn't answer from the data analysis in the end, like disentangling effects of mussels from nutrient effects, or so to have like another tool to do digital experiments to the lake itself.
Nice. That seems like a really good project combining field work, lab work, and even computer modeling, I guess. That sounds very
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
holistic.
Even for me, like coming as an environmental engineer into biology, it was like a cool aspect to see like different parts, like experiments, but also computer work, which I was used to a bit more before. And then this data analysis, which was a pretty good point to turn an engineer into an ecologist a bit.
Nice, fantastic. And so that brings us on to the final question. So we talked a little bit about the role that mussels and bivalves can play sort of to culture and food and gastronomy, but I'm not really a particular fan of mussels or oysters when it comes to cooking and eating. And I was wondering if you felt the same way, and perhaps if your attitude towards these dishes has changed as a result of your years of research with mussel species. You mentioned earlier that some people in Berlin come and collect these mussels and turn them into a soup. Is that something you've ever tried, and what's your opinion?
I really liked them a lot before, and I think it changed a bit that I'm not eating them as often as before. I have eaten an oyster once, just to try it out afterwards, but it definitely changed a bit, and also it changed a bit because some part of my experiments is that I need to dry the mussels after the experiment to get the dry weight of them to normalize my filtration rates. And I'm doing this close to a part of the IGB where we also have the workshop, and the workshop guys are always coming out and screaming at me, and they want to order like, ah, the next round should go with some white wine and some fries, and they are doing this joke over and over, and it's still funny.
Nice. Well, I'm sorry that your professional life has affected your personal life in that respect for
Ah, that's
eating muscles,
fine.
but yeah.
That's part of the
Great. Well, it's been really great to chat to you, Jonas, and thanks so much for coming on. And I've had a really good chat and I've learned a lot.
Cool. Thanks, Joe. It was awesome being here.
No problem. Thanks very much. See you, Jonas. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Para Aqua podcast was funded by COST, the European Cooperation in Science and Technology, and is a product of the Para Aqua Action Group. If you are interested in joining an action group or just want to know more, please go to www.paraaqua-cost.eu or follow the link in the episode description. The podcast is produced by myself and Serena Rasconi, and the Science Communication Coordinator is Anna Gavrilovich. Once again, thanks for listening, and see you next time on the Para Aqua podcast.